The Bookers Podcast.
Now a part of the Land Grant Holy Land podcast feed.
Welcome in, everybody. This is your host, Christopher Rennie, bringing you the first episode of Buck Off in sort of a new life in a way. We're starting off with SB Nation's Land Grant Holy Land affiliate. So make sure you're not only listening to my show from here on out, but you're listening to the rest of that feed as well. I've got quite a few talented people joining forces to try to build up that podcast feed. It's exciting. We've got my show, Buck Off, as you many of you might have listened to before. Some of you haven't, so I'm going to introduce myself again. I am Christopher Rennie. I'm an Ohio State graduate. I love Ohio State football, but I really do try to bring an objective perspective, not to rhyme right away. But it's exciting. We're deep into the offseason now. Spring practice is even over, but I'm here with Matt Tamanini. I'll make sure I said that right, Matt.
Yeah, that works.
But I'd like to bring you in for an introduction to the Buck Off, the listenership that I've built up so far.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I've been with Land Grant Holy Land now for, it's getting close to 5 years, and I've been one of the managing editors now on and off for about 3 years. And if you listen to the Land Grant Holy Land podcast feed, you hear me in there quite a bit. So we're really excited to be teaming with you, Chris. Like, this is a really cool opportunity for both of us. And like you said, we've just recently launched a whole new slate of podcasts in the Land Grant Holy Land feed with a bunch of new voices, a bunch of new perspectives. And we always like to brag that what we do in the LGHL feed is a little different than what most of the other Ohio State podcasts do. Obviously, we talk about all of the news and everything going on around Buckeye Nation there, but we try to do it with a little bit different perspective, a little bit more fun, and try to talk about things in a little bit more broader perspective than just the sometimes myopic and singularly focused Ohio State community. So looking forward to adding you into that mix, and think this is going to be a really cool way to get through the off season, and then it'll be obviously all systems go once we get to the fall and football kicks back up.
Oh, for sure. I'm excited to get working with you, especially, Matt. I've been reading all your stuff, especially since I kicked off with this. And I'm just excited to really just dive into it. A new adventure, you know, it's always fun. And, you know, I'm going to be surrounded with talented people of common interest, and you can't really ask for more than that. Nope. So, I mean, what are we getting into today? We've got some draft final thoughts. I know we've kind of covered that one to death, us, everyone else. So I think we're going to kind of stick to some evaluation, some final fits, some of our favorite landing spots for guys on this one. Just kind of, you know, wrap it up, put a nice pin in it. And then there's some people who are leaving us. I mean, it's kind of, it's turning into a free-for-all out there. People kind of come and go whenever they want, and it's kind of hurting my feelings a little bit, but I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that Ohio State has seen a number of people departing for perhaps greener pastures, but it's coming from a lot of different areas. Not only have we had a football player leave recently, we've had a basketball player leave recently, but we've also seen some super important folks that kind of work behind the scenes for the Ohio State football team leave, and I think they're all leaving for different reasons, and I think they'll... No offense to some of these people, I think some people will have a bigger impact on the product that we end up seeing than others will. And I guess we can get into that a little bit more in depth when we get there. But some of them will have very little impact, if any at all. And it might be surprising which ones those are.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I guess when I was creating this show plan, I didn't think the theme, the overarching theme of it would be people leaving, because we got the draft. We got, you know, we got draft predictions for next year. People leaving then. We got staff turnover in the media department. People leaving there. Then we got two important transfers to certain extent.
Yeah, important's a relative term, Chris.
yeah, for sure. I mean, we'll see how they impact their future teams, but I think that just the way fans are treating these transfers, I think they're very interesting conversation topics to get into.
Very, very weird.
Yeah, I think we'll get started with putting a pin in the 2021 NFL draft. I think that's a good place to go. It's kind of where the week started. We'll start with where the week started and kind of work our way through it. But Ohio State had 10 players drafted this year. That's the second year in a row. One of the few teams who have done that with Alabama, and I believe one other program in the 2000 millennium. I believe it was Miami.
That makes sense.
And, you know, we had Justin Fields go number 11 overall. We could have our complaints about that, but I kind of want to get started with him. I think, obviously, we'll go with the biggest name drafted. I think the Bears are actually a pretty good fit, and to lead a segue into your thoughts on that, I really like Matt Nagy, what he said from it, the trust he put into Ryan Day as a friend in the evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And then you take a look at Justin. He goes to a place that wanted him. They traded up to get him. That's an obvious sign that, hey, this is our guy moving forward. You know, they have Andy Dalton. So if Justin Fields isn't ready, per se, immediately, they have a bridge guy in place. And Nagy said there's not going to be a rush to him.
Yeah, I think two of the things you said there are really important. The first one is that the Bears obviously wanted to have Justin Fields as their quarterback of the future. And I think that's important not only from a team perspective, but also from a fan perspective. With all of the BS that we've heard slung around about Justin Fields over the past few months leading into the draft, I was a little concerned that if it was just a smokescreen and someone like the 49ers or the Jets ended up taking him second or third overall, that fan base might have kind of been poisoned to him by all of the crap that people like Dan Orlovsky and Charlie Casserly were pumping out, and they might not have accepted him. It was so clear from the moment that Fields was drafted that the Bears fans were in 100%. And obviously that doesn't necessarily have the direct impact to how he performs on the field, but it has an impact. And like, I think it has a legit impact. It might be indirect, but how the community and the fan base accepts a player, especially a quarterback, goes a long way. But also, like you said, the Bears were so pumped up to be able to get him at 11. You saw the video of them making the call to Justin Fields, who we saw it for 2 years in the Ohio State press conferences. Fields doesn't show a ton of emotion.
No, he's a cool character.
Very stoic. Yeah, but like Matt Nagy and the front office was much more excited than maybe Fields was. Fields felt like determined. And of course, he'd just seen himself lose millions of dollars in an hour, basically, as he kept falling. So he was probably a little shell-shocked. But I think this is a really good fit from that perspective, because everybody in Chicago wants him there, and I have no doubt that Fields is going to work his ass off to make sure that he lives up to their expectations. But the other part that's really interesting is you talking about Andy Dalton, and there is just very little possibility in my mind that they are going to be able to emulate what they say they want to emulate, which is having Alex Smith start for a year, Patrick Mahomes sit on the bench for a year. Mahomes actually did start one game because Smith was hurt. I just can't see that happening for a lot of reasons. And I talked with Ian Harditz from Pro Football Focus in this podcast feed a couple days ago, and he brought out a stat that like there's only been like four quarterbacks drafted in the top 10, and obviously Fields was 11, so you know, a little fudging there, that didn't become the full-time starter at some point during that season. And the difference is between Dalton and Smith. Smith had been the quarterback in Kansas City for 4 years before Mahomes got there, and then he started for the fifth season and then left and Mahomes took over. Dalton's been in Chicago for a month and a half. He doesn't know the offense that much better. He doesn't have relationships with the other, with the playmakers. So I just can't see a situation in which Fields, a far, far more talented guy than Andy Dalton, especially at this point in his career, doesn't end up taking the reins there, because the Bears aren't bad. They made the playoffs last year. They've been 8-8 the last 2 years. So if their defense continues to be as good as it has been in recent seasons, like, I don't see any reason that Justin Fields won't give them a better chance to have a more interesting and explosive offense and potentially propel them into the playoffs far better than the Red Rocket ever could.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Absolutely. I think when you really look at Justin Fields, I think he's a guy, he's going to work hard. I think as Ohio State fans, we were so appalled by the fact that people were calling him either lazy or not processing. I think the line was last one in, first one out. And, you know, for 2 years, the minute he showed up on campus, like, that was the exact opposite of what we heard. So, like, hearing that was kind of shocking. And, I mean, 2 days later, a day later, he's already in Chicago. He's already working out. He's already, you know, taking on those challenges that are going to be so important in the process to taking over that starting job, being ready when he gets there. Because, you know, I think, like you said, like when Justin Fields was getting interviewed after, he kind of seemed the same quiet, you know, like Justin Fields we see in press conferences. Yeah. He's not showing a lot. He doesn't show his hand really much. He says what a quarterback's supposed to say, and he gets to work. And I think that's going to be an endearing factor for Bears fans as long as they're winning. I think, you know, you see all the drama around the league with quarterbacks right now. They have taken on that, like, $150 million you're paying me, I'm going to speak my mind. Yeah. So I think Justin Fields is never going to be that guy. He just seems to me, and I hate using pro quarterback comparisons, but, you know, like, in a way, Dak Prescott came into the league very quiet, very stoic, never really said anything, never really caused problems, was very talented, came in, won the job. And I think that's kind of the dream scenario for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, and the one thing that might change that, and the way you can always get some emotion and excitement out of Justin Fields, is if you talk about his dog, Uno. If you start talking about Uno, you get a completely different guy out of Justin Fields. But other than that, I think you're right. I mean, he's going to do his job. I don't think he's afraid to speak his mind. But, I mean, I think one of the obvious things that kind of shows you who he is, like, we didn't know that he was diagnosed with epilepsy in ninth grade until, like, halfway through the draft process.
Yeah.
He's been a college quarterback for 3 years, 1 year in Georgia, 2 years in Ohio State. No one's ever mentioned it. He's never mentioned it. And a lot of the beat reporters for Ohio State said, we didn't know. So he's not a guy that just kind of talks for talking's sake. Like, he's going to answer your questions. He kind of does it begrudgingly. He's not a bad guy. Like, I mean, we've seen videos of him dancing in the Ohio State meeting room. He's obviously fun. The other players like him, but it's just not his thing to be out there and talking and being super emotional on Maine. So I think this is a good fit for him. I think the Bears fans will appreciate how hard he works. He's not in a place like New York or Los Angeles where they want you to be a big star too.
Yeah, I think his personality just meshes with Chicago immediately.
Yeah, even though he's from the South, it's a very kind of Midwestern blue-collar, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and do my job kind of personality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I haven't evaluated the Bears roster much, but I think, you know, Justin Fields is the type of guy, regardless of who's around him, he's going to try to elevate whoever he's got. So I'm really excited to see it. Of the other 10 or so Buckeyes selected, what was one of the fits you saw immediately on draft day and you're like, that's it, that's the one?
Man, that's tough because I like a lot of them. I think the first one that came to mind when it happened was Trey Sermon, because we saw Trey Sermon at his best in his final two full games of the season. Obviously, I'm not counting the Alabama game because he only played one play. We saw the type of back that he can be. The problem with going to San Francisco is that Kyle Shanahan likes to use a stable of backs. He's never going to have one true running back who gets, you know, the vast majority of carries. However, I think what Sermon can do fits really well with what the Niners want out of a running back. They want a guy who's tough, a guy who can run north-south, a guy who can make people miss but can also run people over and can block as well. And I think we saw that from Sermon during his one season in Columbus. Even if he didn't start the season in necessarily the best shape and didn't really know the scheme well enough because he'd only been there for a handful of months at that point.
In a COVID year with no real offseason.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, coming in at pick 88 in the third round, like, I think it's a really good fit. It's really good value for them. And he's a guy who's going to go in there. And let's be honest, running backs don't have long shelf lives in the NFL. And one way to borrow a term from the NBA to make sure that they are able to get the most out of their career is load management. So with Trey Sermon being a part of undoubtedly what's going to be a stable in San Francisco, even though I think he has the potential to be the top guy in that stable, it's going to prolong his career. And while that might not be in terms of, you know, might not be the best way to look at it in terms of fit into how he can produce on the field, it is a pretty good fit for how he can extend his career and have the most of an NFL experience. So I really like that one. I think guys like Baron Browning falling all the way to the Broncos is a really good fit for them. He's going to have an opportunity to play there
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just think they all kind of fit really well. I actually really like the Pete Werner situation with the Saints.
The Ohio State Saints.
Yeah, the Ohio State Saints. Because he's going to probably end up starting right away. And, you know, I don't think that Pete is ever going to be the best player on any team he's – or the best linebacker even on any team that he's on. He's going to be lined up next to DeMario Davis, who's an All-Pro.
Yep.
But – He's the guy who's never going to make you feel like he's not capable. He's going to be there. He's going to be able to contribute. And I think he's going to be somebody who, like I said, never going to be the best linebacker on the team, but he's never going to be the type of guy that hurts your chances to win. So I think there's a lot of them. And I think some of these other ones fit well. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I want to kind of keep with Pete for a second here. Pete, you know, one thing about him I think a lot of people in the NFL aren't really ready for, because I think there's still a lot of people confusing him with Tuff Borland, and it's
so unfair.
It's confusing.
It really is unfair.
And the one thing that's going to surprise a lot of people, I think, especially Saints fans, is how athletic Pete actually is. Because, I mean, we both remember his first year as a full-time starter, he was covering, he was playing the half-field safety, covering tight ends like Pat Freiermuth, covering slot receivers at times, and doing a really good job at it. He's a little bit bigger now. I think 235. He was around 220 when he was doing that. But, I mean, last year he was still a very good athlete. He was still able to move in space well. They just wanted him in a different role, and I think that's the Swiss Army knife that Pete Werner is. He could play that new hybrid safety that the NFL loves. He could play a true will or interior linebacker position. I think just the versatility is where I like him. The other one that I liked a lot, just because I think it's partly funny, Josh Myers, they lost Corey Linsley, who went on to become the highest paid center, decided, hey, it worked the first time. Let's go again with a center from Ohio State. I mean, offensive linemen are kind of hard to grade their fit immediately just because you don't know how they're going to be utilized. Yeah. But I like Josh Myers. I think he's going to be a great player. I think Midwest guy, Midwest destination. Then Tommy Togiai to the Browns. I think when you talk about it, he's not going to be a starter right away. He's probably going to be the second guy in on the rotation. But Tommy Togiai brings exactly what a playoff team in the Browns needed on the defensive side of the ball. They need a physical guy up front, explosive off the ball. He can play the one technique at times. He can play the three technique in run situations. He brings a lot of value for that fourth round draft pick. And I think he's a guy later half of the draft who can play and contribute immediately. And I think one thing I really liked, I read this from Andrew Berry yesterday, because the only team I follow more or close to Ohio State's the Browns. They drafted Tommy Togiai. They didn't really give any credence to the combine and the pro day stuff this year. They said, we went, we put in his film, we really liked him, we drafted him. So that means, that tells me two things. They know exactly what player they're getting on the field, and they have a plan on how they're going to utilize him next year.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where the Browns have really started to beef up their defensive line. And as I've told you in the past, I'm not a fan of any particular NFL team. So I just kind of turn on Red Zone on Sundays and watch all the big plays from every game. But the Browns seem to be trying to get back to the dog pound mentality that they like to think of themselves at, like over the decades of the Browns kind of sucking. They got away from that, and the way that they've really been focusing on this defensive line has gotten a lot of that toughness back, and we know that there is nobody stronger and tougher potentially in the entire league, or at least in this draft, than Tommy Togiai, with what we've seen from him in terms of the bench press, off the field, and then on the field. He's just kind of a surly dude that can blow up any play at any point. So I think that he's just adding to a really interesting mentality shift in Cleveland, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I think he's going to fit right in. And you know how many Browns fans are also Buckeye fans. So I think he's going to be one of those guys who ends up being a fan favorite, whether or not he starts, just because of the way he plays and where he played his college football. I think he's going to have a really, really good career with the Browns.
Yeah, it's probably of the picks, not Justin Fields, he's probably my favorite fit, honestly. And then... Yeah. To wrap up the draft conversation. You know, we're going to get into next year's with a fun little topic I kind of came up with on the spot. But we're going to go with that Jonathan Cooper and the kids of his neighborhood. I mean, can that not make you happier? Like,
I love that. Those videos, I said it on a show in the LGHL feed earlier this week, but like the videos of the guys getting drafted, the videos of walk-ons getting scholarships, the videos of the Ohio State coaches calling the players' parents and telling them they're going to be a starter. Like, those videos are like my thing. Like, I love those things. I'll watch all of them. They get me emotional every time. So I love all that stuff. That was one of the best. And we've seen so much from Jonathan Cooper over his time in Columbus of just how he gets knocked down and gets back up again, whether that's in terms of injuries or whatever. We've seen a lot about like his mom's story over the years. And that's just another example of how like he's a guy who's going to succeed. I know it's tough for somebody drafted in the seventh round to make an NFL team, let alone have a great career. But like, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Jonathan. Absolutely. Like, he's just a guy who works hard. He's not the most athletic in terms of defensive ends that have come out of Columbus, but like, dude works hard. He's incredibly tough. He's incredibly intelligent. He's incredibly skilled. So I'm rooting for him with all my heart.
I think I like exactly what you said. I think in Columbus, he had so many trials and triumphs and then setbacks. And, you know, I think if any of the players to fall to the seventh round who are going to use this as a motivation tactic, I think Cooper's going to be the guy who's going to absolutely make it. And then 10 years later, when we're like, oh, Jonathan Cooper played 10 years in the NFL. I mean, it's not going to shock any of
that
us.
That tracks.
I mean, he may never be a superstar, but he's going to have a long career. Right?
I hope so.
But yeah, I mean, those guys left us on a positive note. I think, you know, tying Alabama with 10 players drafted, I think that's exciting for the program. It's another thing they could market, but we're going to have different people doing it from here on out. Our media department turnover. I think that's the next thing I want to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wasn't sure where you were going. There's definitely something you can market. I mean, I've said this for years. We've posted articles about it on Land Grant. Like, Ohio State's social media team is the best. Like, I know people want to talk about LSU, blah, blah, blah. Ohio State's social media team, between the hype videos, between the social media posts, they are the absolute best. And you're right, there's been some turnover, especially in the last few years, and it seems like there's been a couple even this offseason. But like, I love what they do, and I love the kind of the perspective and the creativity that they have. But yeah, I'll let you kind of get into that point.
Yeah, so in the social media department, the creative department, I don't know the exact terminology they like to use to call themselves, but I think under Mark Fantoni and Urban Meyer, they really took social media on and ran with it. A lot of programs kind of fell a little bit behind, and that's part of having smart people, number one, leading the program and getting the best young talent at creative design that you can find in sports and getting them into your program to say, hey, make cool stuff so we can post it on social media so recruits see it. They can see how much it grows the brand. You know, with name, image, and likeness stuff coming up, with all that, I mean, the social media teams building the following, that's going to be such an important part of the recruitment process. I think a lot of people, I don't think anyone's undervaluing it, but I don't think a lot of people are seeing the true scope of how important these teams are going to become in major college sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've seen for years at Ohio State, even kind of predating this most recent rise of name, image, and likeness discussions. Like, I want to say it was Larry Johnson, but it might not have been. We've seen a behind-the-scenes video of, like, Ohio State guys coming in and talking with coaches, but then also talking with the I don't know, marketing department, media department, and talking about what they want their brand to be, like coming up with a hashtag for what they want to be. And like, that's part of developing guys now, not only as football players, but as like football properties. Like, you go to a place like Ohio State because you want to have the best opportunity to succeed in the NFL. And while you might just be thinking, oh, you build a brand because you want to make money, but like building a brand is also about like being noticed and being on people's draft radar. Like, just because you play well, obviously a lot of teams are going to find you, but the more your name is in, you know, is on ESPN and on podcasts and on websites, like, that's part of catching the eyes of scouts in the NFL. So like, it's all one big package now, and this is something that Ohio State has done really, really well. And as we see the opportunities for players to make money with name, image, and likeness moving forward, like, they're almost going to be like their, not agents, but like their marketing managers in terms of helping promote them to hopefully make those players some money. And I don't know how that will work in terms of like legit connections on if they're actually the ones helping them make the money, but just making them more prominent in communities is a big deal when it comes to NIL rights.
Yeah, and I think the two biggest names I saw leave this year were Chris Charizopoulos and Zach Schwartz, and those two guys were in pretty high positions in that regard. So I think replacing them has to be of the utmost importance moving forward with young, exciting people, because in creative stuff, I think that's kind of always the way to move.
Yeah, and yes, they are. I'm sure that they were very, very talented. We don't exactly know who does exactly which stuff, but I'm sure that they are leaving Ohio State for really good jobs somewhere. Like, it's turned into like a really good stepping stone, probably working with a professional sports team. But I also really trust Mark Pantone and Ryan Day to find guys who are going to be able to continue what has been established in the past and to evolve it and to continue to make it better. So I feel like Mark Pantone, there's a reason that he's out there leading seminars on player development or whatever his officially title is. It's because he's the best in the business. So I trust him to be able to figure out the way forward with this. But I think you're absolutely right. You cannot undersell how important that part of the Ohio State program is to the success of players in the team on and off the field.
Yeah, and I think the NCAA is changing. Everything's changing. We already talked about it. But underselling this would be the biggest mistake this program could make, because we're in the top tier. Yeah. I mean, other schools are going to claim theirs are the best. I know Oklahoma's got a pretty talented team down there. I know LSU during the Burrow time. I mean, we could have all had a great social media with Burrow in that year. I don't think the challenge wasn't that. I mean, anyone could have made the jersey. It was fun. But I think on a day-to-day basis, seeing what Ohio State's come up with, I think new faces, this is exciting, honestly. And I think what you said, bringing up Pantone being the best in the business, I'm not exactly worried, but I am excited to see what we get to see in the future, because there's going to be new ways to sell the player. There's going to be new ways. Like, unfortunately, a few years ago, a UCF player had to choose between football and a YouTube. In a couple years, we're going to be getting full-on, probably Cribs-type TV shows on YouTube with the Ohio State football program.
Bring it on. Let's go. I will watch every second of that.
I know Cribs is probably a little outdated, but
it's my generation. That I'm old, Chris. I remember the actual Cribs shows. I get it. I know.
You know, was it Discovery Plus or Paramount? One of the new streaming services has all those old MTV shows, and it's been my favorite.
It'd be Paramount. Yeah. Paramount probably does. They're a Viacom company.
With the YouTube vlogging generation, I know so many young kids who are Ohio State fans would absolutely just connect with that. And you know, this stuff, it's all coming, and players are going to be able to make money off of it. Players are going to be able to sell themselves to an audience in a greater way. You know, we get these images on Twitter now. We get the occasional video. But this, there's so much that the horizons are endless right now.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm very much looking forward to the day that the players can actually do some of the things that the NCAA has been preventing them from doing for decades.
Yeah, and I think that's the other aspect of this conversation, the NCAA side, the replacement side, and I think we're going to see more of it. I'm excited. But overall, I think it was just something we needed to touch on, because I think fans don't realize how much work goes into creating all that. And someone's doing it.
And how important it is. Yeah, and how important it is.
And Yeah, I guess that's kind of just why I wanted to touch on it today. I think a new direction's always good in creative design. Sometimes it goes a little too far, but, you know, we just call that art, and we move on to the next creative design thing. So they're leaving. It's been a good ride. I really liked the, I can't remember what they called it, but the theme they used this year with all the Scarlet stuff was awesome. And ending it in the draft with that futuristic, three-dimensional, kind of retro futuristic combination was cool. So we'll see where it goes. But what do you want to talk about next? You want to go basketball? It's the offseason for them, too. We want to go football with the transfers.
Let's go football. Let's stick with football first.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so I think we've all heard the news. About a week ago, a week and a half ago, Jameson Williams entered the transfer portal. And very shortly after he announced his list, it included multiple teams, USC, Alabama, that team up north, unfortunately. So you could tell there was a little chip on his shoulder when he was walking out the door. But Jameson Williams, he's transferring to Alabama. He's already been touted as the next Devontae Smith by their fans. I'm sure we're all wishing him well. There's no ill will. Even totally. With some of the out-the-door stuff that happened. But I really like Jameson. I think Tom Orr, I think he's with the Scoop now. He had a great picture of the week type thing where it's like Jameson Williams celebrating his teammates. So we're losing a pretty good character guy on the field.
He's been
very fast.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who, if you watch the very few press conferences that he was able to do, especially this past year because of all the COVID stuff, like we didn't get as much interview time with him as we have in recent years with players. But like, he's a fun dude. Like, he's a really good interview. He always seems to be smiling. Like you said, I saw that thread as well of all the times that like he's on the sideline and like watching somebody score,
biggest smile,
or watching an interception. Yeah, it just seems like a really connected dude. Let's put on our analyst hats here. Like, Jameson Williams was a starter last year.
He played well,
but
he didn't
get a lot of opportunities.
Didn't really flash anything over the top special.
Right. And for whatever reason, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson were the guys who got the vast majority of targets and receptions for Ohio State last year.
And I could ask now, one you, of the I, obvious I wonder reasons. Why, you know?
Yeah, they're, I think PFF right now has them as wide receiver one and wide receiver two in the entire country coming into next year. So I wrote this a couple of weeks ago when I did a two deep for the season after the spring game. Like, Jameson had his opportunity to cement himself in the rotation. He didn't do that. And no matter how well he played in the spring, there's always going to be that allure of the younger guys. Jackson Smith and Jigba, he flashed last year. Jameson didn't as much. So it was quite obvious that Jameson had been bumped down the pecking order. I really thought that there was a chance that he might have had to really fight not to be bumped off the second team.
Absolutely.
So while it sucks to be losing him, especially to Alabama, I don't know that Ohio State is actually losing much more than depth. Like, I don't think he was going to be a major contributor unless it was on special teams. I hope that he has a great career at Alabama. He's going to be alongside John Michi. I think he's the only really major contributor from the wide receivers that's left after Smith and Waddle left.
Yeah, I think it's Slade Bolden's his name. He's the other guy who contributed last year. And I think Jameson Williams brings an immediately different skill set than him. So,
yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what they ask him to do, because, like, really at Ohio State, all he needed to do was be fast.
Yeah.
If they want him to do more at Alabama, that might show that he's got more skill set than that, but he just never really had the opportunity to show it at Ohio State. And like you said, no ill will. Happy for the kid. Wish him the best, and I hope Ohio State gets revenge on Alabama and plays him later in the season, just like they did Clemson the year before.
Yeah, and I think one thing we got to touch on, because a lot of people were like, well, specifically one guy, RJ Young, was like, Nick Saban came in and pulled a coup on Brian Hartline's receiver room and took Jameson Williams out. And you sort of mentioned it with your 2-deep article. I've talked about it a bunch of times on this show. I mean, after the spring game, we had Amike Egbuka with was it 12 catches? We had Marvis Harrison Jr.
Insane.
With a 5 catches and a touchdown. And those guys are true freshmen. Not to mention you have Julian Fleming, who has been battling injuries since he was in high school and still an absolute freak. Needs to get a little bit more comfortable catching the football in game situations. But then you have Jackson Smith, who took the slot. And once Jackson Smith moved into the slot position, Olave was moving back outside. There goes one of Williams' opportunities to get on the field. And then Garrett Wilson's not coming off the field next year. He's playing for money at this point.
Yeah.
So the reality of the situation was Jameson Williams saw the writing on the wall, knew that 75% of the targets were probably to go to Olave and Wilson. When you're a junior, getting a little bit more old, as they say, I guess. He's still only, 21 years old. But, you know, you start seeing the less opportunities. You start seeing that, and you're like, this is kind of starting to affect my future. People aren't seeing me as much as I'd like them to see me. And I think that's the biggest reason he left. He didn't want to fight for that other 25% of targets. He wanted to come into a place, have a real opportunity to be the number two guy and compete in that way rather than compete with guys who are younger than him, who might be more talented than him. I'm not going to get into any arguments online and Instagram comments about it. But I think it's just one of those situations. There's a lot of talent. There's opportunity elsewhere. The fit just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he, like you said, he was would have been fighting with like five other guys for 25% of the targets on, you know, based off of your numbers. Even if he got a majority of those, that's not a lot of targets. At Alabama, he has an opportunity to get a larger chunk of targets, which you can't fault him. This is a business. These are guys trying to get the most out of their college career to help them in the NFL. So no bones about it. I'm happy. I'm excited for him, but I don't think it's really going to impact Ohio State on the field much this year.
I agree. And moving forward, I think there's some certain amount of people who had a lot of bones about this transfer. Ibrahima Diallo.
So
and
weird.
I was, when we were talking just about this transfer, a lot of like the comments were like, Chris Holtmann can't run a program. He lost another guy. And I was just like, wait a minute, what? I'm like, this honestly could turn out to be a blessing, number one. And number two, like, this is college basketball now. People are going to leave. People are going to come. It's everyone's transferring. I think Connor, he wrote an article, 25% of Division I basketball players or something like that are in the transfer portal.
Yep. Yeah. This is what college basketball is now, especially during the COVID year when there is a no fault transfer rule where you can transfer and play right away. Obviously, this is not the first time that Holtmann's lost guys. We saw him lose DJ Carton and a bunch of other guys over the past couple of seasons. That's just par for the course now. Like, you've got 13 scholarships in men's basketball. 13 players aren't really going to be able to contribute.
Nope.
For basketball teams. So there's going to be a bit of attrition when guys just aren't getting the opportunities that they want or not. They aren't developing as quickly there. So they go to find someplace else. There's nothing wrong with that. When you bring in a guy like Ibrahima Diallo, who is from the Sudan, only came over to the United States, I think as a junior in high school, never really played a ton of basketball growing up, but he's 6'11 or 6'10 or whatever. Like, you knew he was going to be a project. And for whatever reason, he was hurt a ton during his Ohio State career.
And that sort of happens with 7-footers.
Exactly. So, you know, like, that's just how it works. You roll the dice on him. It didn't work out at Ohio State. Hopefully, wherever he ends up, probably on a lower level, whether that's a mid-major or lower, or you know, even a lower division. I think it's awesome that he's here. I think it's awesome that he's playing basketball and getting an education. I don't think that he was ever somebody who could factor into the future for the Buckeyes, even with 3 years of eligibility still remaining. I don't think he was technically a redshirt during his freshman year, but maybe he was. But like you said, this opens up the opportunity. This opens up a scholarship spot for the Buckeyes to potentially get another big on the roster. I don't know if that makes a ton of sense because of how much playing time there's going to be available, but It definitely has the potential to let the Buckeyes get at least one more guy into this class.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when you look at Ibrahima Diallo's prospect profile on 24/7 Sports, his composite rating was 369. He was always going to be a project player. He was kind of, like you said, beat with injuries. And I think one thing that I've noticed in the Holtmann era is he has kind of been getting that treatment where he can't do anything right. They said, hey, when you come in here, you better recruit these top-end talents. You know, he gets DJ Carden. He gets a few other – he gets Liddell and a few other guys. And guess what? DJ Carden's a little unhappy with his role because Holtmann likes experienced guards. Like, that's his thing. He likes to have veteran guards that play good defense. So CJ Walker fit that mold. Dwayne Washington gives everybody headaches, but he was experienced. He was a good ball handler. And when he was on his A game, I don't think there's a guard who could match him offensively in the country.
Yeah.
Carden fell out. People were super upset about it. Team gets older. Team looks better throughout the regular season. Team looks more experienced. People are really excited. We fall short a little bit in the Big Ten tournament, and then obviously the Oral Roberts game happened. But some of that stuff is unpredictable college basketball, and some of that stuff is, you know, Colbin's year three, I think going on year four.
Going on year five.
I don't have many complaints. I think a lot of people are really overvaluing Ohio State's basketball program. What, one championship in 100-year history? It gets the unfair comparison to the football team, which I think Connor mentioned in his most recent article about it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, this was always going to be a 5-10-year product. I think Thad Matta might have been the greatest basketball coach in Ohio State basketball history. He didn't win a championship. But the constant amount of success, the Sweet 16s, the Elite Eights, a few Final Four appearances, the national championship appearance, that was peak Ohio State basketball. That's what it can be. And most of those teams, I think the more recent one, the Aaron Kraft, the John Dealer team, that was experienced guys. Not all of them were the most highly touted recruits. And they ended up growing together and becoming a great team. And I think that's how Holtmann did it at Butler. That's how Holtmann's always done it. And I don't think we could force his identity. And I think that's what the fan base is trying to do.
Well, and I think you're right. I think a lot of people are spoiled by their memories and nostalgia for the Thad Matta era, but they forget, like, Matta wasn't a guy for the first half of his career at Ohio State who landed a ton of studs. It wasn't until, like, Mike Conley Jr. and Greg Oden basically fell in his lap that he was able to turn that around. And then you got guys like D'Angelo Russell who came in. But he was never somebody up there competing with the Dukes and the Kentuckys and the Kansas and the North Carolinas for the top five star guys. Obviously, he got some, but that wasn't necessarily the buildup for his team. Like, he was doing it in a lot of the same ways that Chris Holtmann was.
It's guys like David Leidy. It's guys like William Buford who are from the Midwest who are under – valued nationally, that come to Ohio State, they develop, and then they create this team, and then you get a Greg Oden on your lap, and you're good.
Yeah, and that's very similar to what Holtmann is doing, because now you're starting to see with him being in the mix for some of the best players in the country. Hasn't landed them yet, but you're seeing Ohio State pop up as a finalist, like the legit on the graphic edit finalists for a lot of like really big
which
players.
Which is like a small thing, but that's actually a really big thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. The number one player in the country who just committed to Gonzaga had Ohio State as one of his three finalists.
Crystal ball to him for some time.
Was it Chet Holmgren? I don't remember, but I might be wrong.
I might have just been my fan goggles on.
I think he was. I think he was expected to go to Gonzaga the whole time. But Chet Holmgren is the number one player in the country. He's a full five star. He literally has the highest possible grade.
He's
you
a seven footer who can dribble
on the 24/7. Yeah, and he's got the highest possible score you can get on 24/7 Sports composite ratings. And he had Ohio State as one of his three finalists. That's a big deal because it also not only shows you that Chris Holtmann is close with a lot of these players, but it also shows other players that, oh, Holmgren liked Ohio State that much, maybe we should give them a look as well. So I don't know if he's going to break through with maybe potentially getting Efton Reed, who's another five-star center, number 25 player in the country this year, who's had a really weird delayed recruiting. Maybe he gets EJ Onyu, who is an NAIA player from Cleveland, who is looking to make the jump to Division One this year.
He's at 6'11".
Or if it's somebody...
Correct.
Yeah, 6'11", or maybe it's not until 2022 or 2023, but I think Ohio State is close to kind of breaking through, and they're not going to get the best players in the country every season, but they're going to be in there, and they're going to land a five-star guy once every couple seasons, and that's going to make a huge difference for Holtmann in the way that he's perceived both on and off
the
floor.
Two things. I think the Midwest will always be a very great basketball region, so there's always going to be an opportunity to win some of those recruiting battles. And two, I think Chris Holtmann, from a success standpoint, is a Sweet 16 away from getting a raise before he'd get fired, right? I don't think we'll miss the tournament. We've got a lot of people returning, but I think this team next year has just as much opportunity to make the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, do something dangerous.
No, they're a better team. Yeah.
I think that's the trajectory we should have been on.
Yeah, this team that coming back this year, assuming Dwayne Washington and EJ Liddell return, which at this point, who the hell knows, they're better. I mean, they lost CJ Walker, but they replaced him with Jamari Wheeler. They got Joey Brunk, who's going to be like a backup
center. Kind of a hustle
center.
Player. Comes in, provides rebound and energy.
Exactly. So, and then they actually have Chris Holtmann's top-rated recruit in his entire career coming in Malachi
Brannon.
He's
awesome.
So who knows? Yeah. So, I mean, I think like they're going to be better this year. Ohio State was a legit Final Four contender this past season. It obviously didn't play out that way on the court, but like they were a legit Final Four team, you know, a potential Final Four team. So like I think that is very much a possibility next year. But you're right, Holtmann has to get to the second weekend next year, or things might turn ugly. But I think if he does that, like it just shows that there is progress and they have the ability to compete with
the
big
absolutely
boys.
And I think it's right there for the taking. I think, you know, we see some of those guys. Michigan State just lost a big-time recruit. Our buddies up north, our rivals, they just lost Franz Wagner, possibly to the draft. He's probably going. He's the ninth-rated player in it. So I would be surprised if he came back if he's graded out as a lottery pick. So there's going to be a lot of transitioning teams next year. Iowa's finally going to be without Luka Garza, so... Ohio State, if they return a lot of that talent, and I'm assuming Dwayne Washington and Liddell come back because they have possibilities to become lottery picks at some point if they play really well next year. And I think that experience combined with some of the new guys added is a very good recipe for a conference championship at the bare minimum.
Yeah, and keep in mind, in the 2022 class, I know it's early, but in the 2022 class, Ohio State currently has three commitments, and they are ranked number one in the country. They've got the number one recruiting class in the country currently. Obviously, there's a long way to go, but they've got two four-star guys. Roddy Gale is the 41st player in the country. Bruce Thornton is the 59th player in the country. Then they've got Bowen Hardman, who's actually the only Ohio player in the class so far. He's number 141. So, like, they've got the number one class in the country. I don't think it'll stay there if they don't add more guys, but, like, they've got some good talent coming in, and Holtmann's recruiting some guys who can play. So hopefully that keeps up. Maybe they add another stud in that class to keep them up in the top three or four. But I think things are on the right track.
I'm in that boat for sure. I don't know how Ibrahima Diallo's transfer kind of reflects the program in a negative way, but if you ask some fans, he's lost it. So we'll trust those guys, right?
Yeah.
I think there's two quick, I guess, recruiting topics I want to talk about real quick, and then we'll get into that final little draft topic, I guess, to close it out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, one, I guess Henry 2020. I don't even know if I'm saying that right still.
I think it's to is how I yeah.
I'll learn it eventually. It's just like JT's last name. Sometimes I say yeah. it right, sometimes yeah. not. But
commit, and then we'll yeah. learn your
and,
name.
Well, I'll call him Henry for the show's sake. And Henry go. Is a guy. His recruitment has kind of actually taken some steps forward finally. Bucknuts, I believe, released their input on this, and they're saying he's a heavy Ohio State lean, which is exciting. The other thing is, the interesting thing I took away from that article was the fact that a lot of his family wants him to go to Ohio State. And we've seen recently how important family is in recruiting processes with some people who chose not to go to Ohio State. But Henry is a guy who would help this team out immediately. And I guess two topics here. Do we have any idea on the timeline? I don't believe we do. It could be any minute now, or it could be in a couple months. That's kind of where we're at with him. And what he brings a lot. So he'd come in, he'd probably start immediately, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's a guy who – he's a transfer, so he's not coming in as a true freshman. He's an all-SEC linebacker. So he's going to come in and start right away. I don't know who he will start opposite, like if it'll be Dallas Gant or Taraja Mitchell, but he will take one of the two starting linebacker jobs, assuming that the bullet stays as its own separate thing. But he's a guy who comes in and instantly makes Ohio State better. I think he helps the team go from having a defense who, honestly, I'm a little suspect and a little worried about, kind of like we saw last year. I don't know that they got much better from last year. And in fact, I think the secondary might have gotten a little worse.
We're going to need to see a lot of the secondary take some leaps forward this year to be
exactly. I think they've got more talent maybe than they had last year, but they're unproven. But having a guy who is a proven linebacker playing at Tennessee, playing in the SEC, and having as much success as he did, like, that's huge. Now, I disagree a little bit in terms of timeline. I can't imagine that he doesn't want to be on campus wherever he ends up for all of the summer sessions. So I would imagine, and this is just me guessing, like, I would think we have it this month. Like, I don't think he wants, I mean, maybe early June, but like, I don't think he wants to spend the summer working out on his own and miss out on learning the scheme, getting to know his teammates, you know, working with, if he comes to Ohio State, Coach Mick. Like, I think he's going to want to be on campus wherever he goes by the time the summer semester or whatever rolls around. I don't know if there's any like registration deadlines that he has to hit at either Ohio State or Alabama, which is presumably the other school that he's looking at. But I think it happens sooner rather than later. I don't think this is something where he waits till fall.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with his talent level, because he's a guy who can come in, play extremely well, and get drafted next year.
Yeah, I mean, I have him projected in the kind of silly 2022 Ohio State draft piece that I did. Like, I think that that's a very likely potential that he only plays one season yeah. in Columbus.
So I think the one holdup that kind of made me extend the timeline was apparently there's this SEC ruling coming up about the intra-conference yeah. rule. I don't know the timeline on that because I don't really follow their news all that much.
I don't think there is one.
So
yeah, I don't think there is one.
If you're going to make your decision based on that, you could be waiting until next year, honestly. So I'm hoping it's within the next month. I think they called it the Maymester, the Junemester, you know, those early summer classes you could kind of get in for. And
when I went to Ohio State, we were on quarters, so I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I had my yeah. fair share of summer classes, but I think some were 16 weeks, some were 8 weeks, some were 4 weeks, so it never really made sense to me in the summer. But I think he's a guy I'm excited to see. And then the other one, and this is interesting because of the other players we're recruiting at the position. Ohio State took the recruitment from, I believe, Kai Stokes from Florida. He's an yep. athlete, projected to play safety. If you look at who recruited him, it was Matt Barnes. It was Kerry Coombs. So he's a big, big safety. Comparison I saw was Josh Proctor. So I think, what does that mean for the guys, I believe, like Xavier and Wonka? Are we taking multiple safeties? Is this something where we took a flyer on him because of the developmental aspect of him? Maybe he hasn't found a position in high school, or he's just overutilized at his high school, kind of like Cam Martinez was, and he's just kind of under the radar. I'm just interested to see what Kai Stokes means for the rest of the class.
No, see, here's the thing. I think he's a stud. I've watched a little bit of him, and he's from I know where his high school is. I've passed his high school many, many times. I live in Orlando. He's in between Orlando and Tampa. Goes to Armwood Academy, a really big football powerhouse in Florida. Like, I think he's legit. I think one of the reasons that he hasn't flashed as much is because he hasn't had an opportunity to go to a lot of those camps that have been canceled over the last few years. And that's how a lot of these recruiting analysts for sites like 24/7 Sports and Rivals really get the opportunity to see them. I think he's a stud. And what I think is really interesting about kind of the guys you've mentioned in terms of who Ohio State is going after, to kind of look at the multiple defensive backs and especially safeties that they're targeting, they're all different. And that really plays to the idea of how Ohio State's defense, and especially their secondary, is changing as well. When you start to implement a position like the bullet, you need different types of guys. You need to have a guy who is a little bit of a linebacker, a little bit of a safety. If you're going to talk about, you know, going to a single high, you need a different guy than you would have if you're going to have, you know, a safety, strong safety. Yeah. So I think Xavier and Wakpa is still their number one target. I think he's probably the best safety in the country, even though he's not currently rated that way. I think that they could very well go out and get three safeties in this class. And they'll all do different things, you know, and they'll all be guys who have different responsibilities and different fits on this team, whether or not they are all officially safeties or if one of them becomes a bullet or whatever the hell we're going to call
it. It's for sure a position of need. And, you know, after losing out on, I'm blanking on his name, Indiana.
Dawson McCullough.
When he decommitted, that kind of, a lot of people had him kind of projected as that hybrid safety linebacker type. And, you know, filling this out, like, Kai Stokes is a pretty big looking guy. I think
he moves. I think he moves like a guy who could be a corner. Like, I don't know if they might eventually move him to corner, but like, he has the athleticism and I think the coverage ability to
play
corner.
My initial thoughts were he's kind of like similar to Ryan Watts, a little bit more on the muscular side, I guess, because Ryan Watts was a little bit leaner and longer when he was coming in. But he's just lengthy. You can't tell if he's going to be a safety, a corner when he comes in. And I think that's actually kind of a built-in advantage with recruiting a guy like that, is you take him, you give him to Mickey, you tell him what you want, and he's going to put him in Mickey's factory of football players, and he's going to come out exactly what you need. And that's what I'm excited for. I think that's one thing. He looks like a guy who has a lot of potential. He looks like a guy who could do a lot of things. And once you get into a program like Ohio State and you have an athlete who plays multiple positions in high school focusing on one thing, that's usually a super dangerous thing because they understand the game of football on a 360-degree scope when they get there.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think recruiting, I think we're in a good place right now. We're starting to get some momentum back. You know, we're going to have a big topic here throughout the month with the recruiting day at the beginning of June, the recruiting weekend. But I think the last thing to get into today would be the over-under for first-round draft picks for Ohio State next year. I think that's kind of what I wanted to get into just because, you know, we could do all the projecting we want, try to pick rounds and stuff, but I'm like, you know what? Let's just do it with the first round. Let's see if we get over 5.5. And that's a high number. It's a tough number.
Yeah, that's really tough because that means if they take if you take the over with this, that you are saying that they either tie or potentially even break the record, which was originally set by Miami in 2004, and then Alabama just tied it this past weekend. So knowing that, I'm going to go under, but I think it's going to be close. I've got 5 Buckeyes projected in my mock draft, which is ridiculous to say that I have a mock draft. But in the article that I did, I've got 5 Buckeyes going in the first round. I think Ohio State has the chance to actually break the total draft number record next year. But I have 5 going. I've got Garrett Wilson, Zach Harris, and Chris Olave, Seven Banks, and Nicholas Petit-Frere all going. Seven Banks, I kindly took a flyer on just because Ohio State guys seem to go a lot higher in the draft as cornerbacks than I ever expect them to when they're really good, like Damon Arnett. But that obviously worked out for him.
I love
really
how
well.
You have him going to New Orleans.
Yeah, exactly. They draft everybody. But I think, you know, there's other guys in there. Tyreek Smith, Teron Vincent, Thayer Munford, Haskell Garrett. If Henry To'oto comes to Columbus, like, that could happen too. So, you know, I think that there's a potential for 6. If I'm putting any money down, which is, you know, the assumption if you're talking about an over or under, I'd go under. But it would be by the thinnest of margins.
Yeah, I think at 5.5, it's interesting because I think you have 2 locks for the first round with Olave and Wilson. So you'd already be 40% of the way there. One of the DNs, whether...
That's impressive. That's impressive math skills, Chris. I'm impressed.
Don't rely on that in the future. I make up a lot of numbers. Then you have Zach Harrison, who's a guy, if he breaks through and lives up to his 5-star pedigree with everything you're hearing in the Woody Hayes... Coming out of there, it seems to be the case at this point in the offseason. That's 3. Hopefully, Nicholas Petit-Frere continues on his developmental path. That's every offense needs a tackle, whether he plays the right or left side in the pros. He's an athlete. And then you have Thayer Munford. I think that's possibly 5. He's a little older, but I was reading this interesting article the other day, and he was Pro Football Focus's one of their highest-rated tackles. And in the Big Ten, he's been an All-Big Ten performer multiple times. Penei Sewell was, at his best, a second-team All-Big Ten performer. Now, granted, physically one of the most imposing figures I've ever seen in the draft. And then Rashawn Slater never had the same award pedigree or, you know, he just never got that recognition that Thayer Munford has. So Thayer Munford's been good that long, that consistently. I just think... A team who values that will see him as a first rounder. And then that's, I think I counted 4 or 5 right there. So that would mean I'd have to get lucky with 2 more guys. And I'm a man of good luck. And I've been a Tyreek Smith truther since he got there. And 2 years ago, I said, this is the guy. You know, he's going to surprise everybody. He's going to be the one Buckeye who rises. Did not. Last year, I'm like, he's going to be the one Buckeye who rises up and he's going to get there. This year's the year he does it. I think Tyreek Smith becomes a top 15 draft pick this year. This is the one. I'm locking it in.
All right.
So that gets me I don't know. I lost count. See, there's the math skills going out the window.
Numbers. Numbers. Yeah.
But Teron Vincent, 5-star guy or high 4-star guy, I can't remember. But still a very talented player. You know, Henry could be a great player this year. But I don't see him as a first-round pick. The other guy would be Haskell Garrett. He's a consensus All-American. He's going to be a superstar next year. I loved every minute of his touchdown against Michigan State. And I know defensive tackles aren't usually the most valued, but in a year where it feels like the quarterback class isn't going to be necessarily on the strongest side, I think that opens up opportunities for more positions to sneak in there. And Haskell Garrett's one of those guys
could be
where I could see him just maybe just cracking it. And getting that to that 7, being that 7th guy at like a 32 or a 31 on like a...
So you're not even saying they're going 6. You're saying they could go to 7. That's bold,
I mean,
Chris.
I think part of it's the homer coming out, but part of it, I'm just looking at these guys and I'm like, you know, these guys are really talented football players. Like, I would not be shocked if these 7 guys went in the first round.
I mean, why stop at 7? Let's say I think they could get 8 or 9.
We've got one guy here we've been missing, and the versatility he's shown in his, I want to say, nine years at Ohio State.
I think you have him
going in the 7th round. But if I'm a team who wants a very high character guy from everything we've ever heard, a guy who could play corner, a guy who could play running back, a guy who could play receiver. Returner, I think you put 30 pounds on him. He could be an elite linebacker at this point. I just don't know And, you know, drafting the mystery could be the best part. So
I do have Damari McCall as Mr. Irrelevant in my
which
in my
is beautiful.
Draft.
I so, think he'd be that would be if anything could be the perfect moment of the draft for Ohio State fans. Him culminating his career and ending it as Mr. Irrelevant would be the most ideal.
I mean, that's
draft
basically
pick.
That's basically what Ohio State has thought of him since he got to Columbus, despite his athleticism. I don't know if I'm driving it, but I have been on the hashtag Free DeMario train for years now. In 2016, I compared him to Spider-Man, and I have not gotten off that train since then. And I've been disappointed by his lack of involvement. I don't know if it's because of his fumbling proclivity, but he seems to be a guy who has kind of been in and out of the doghouse, but always seems to have a smile on his face. So I want nothing more than the best for Damari McCall. And I hope, I mean, I can't see him actually playing at all at cornerback this year, but I hope I
do too, just for at least the fun of it. But yeah, I mean, you know, six players, I think is very possible. I know I said seven guys. That's kind of just more giving the, like, those are seven dudes I could see going in the first round. They might not all get drafted there, but those are seven guys with a great year. Because, I mean, what? We do have four locks at least. I could guarantee one of our DNs goes, one of our offensive tackles goes, and then Olave and Wilson are first rounders. So that means, as Ohio State fans, we get three more guys in there. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, look, stranger things have happened. So if it's going to happen to anybody to get seven, I will take it being
Ohio
State.
And God, you know, just extending that lead would feel so nice.
Yeah, I'll take it. I will take it.
But I think we'll wrap it up with that. Any final thoughts on today's show you want to get off your chest?
No, I think that's good. We covered a lot of ground for our first show together. I'm excited to see what happens in the future. I hope we didn't run out of topics for the next show.
Yeah, I think even retreading some of these with better thoughts is always something I like to do.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, follow Matt on Twitter. I believe it's BWWMatt. He's bringing all things Buckeyes and few other of his interests as well as mine.
Lots of other things. Yeah.
Great follow. Follow me and the show, Chris Rennie CFB on Twitter and Buck Off Pond for all show updates and all things Ohio State. It's going to be a lot of fun moving forward. I'm really excited. I felt like a fun show to go off with the first Land Grant Holy Land show. You guys are going to be able to find this show to tell your friends. Just go to the website, go to the podcast link, and then it'll be there for you. So it's not hard. So if you're the first one of my friends to listen to it, make sure you tell everybody, because not everyone sees my tweets. And let's have some fun. And make sure you listen to everybody else's. Stick to sports. Hang out in the Holy Land. We've got a good group of people trying to provide the best content they can. And that's kind of the final thought I wanted to have. It's going to be a lot of fun working with you guys on all things. So I used to always end the shows with OHs. I don't know if I'm still going to do that. It's a little cheesy.
Look, I will. This is something about me. I am not a synchronized spelling fan. Like, I'm fine with it in the stadium, but even when I wear Ohio State stuff out, like around town here in Orlando, if someone says OH to me, I'll say it. But like, that just seems, I don't know. It seems cheesy. I don't know. I'm not. Yeah. That's not my vibe of
fan.
Yeah,
all right.
Although, go Bucks. I'm good with go Bucks, though.
All right, so let's go Bucks, right? All right.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys next Friday.